bones are amazing things. They hold us up. They support us. They make us strong. But bones have other uses. In the past, bones were thrown by diviners, seeking out the mysteries of the future. Now the bones are cubes, made of plastic or resin. But they still reveal things to us. As they fall from our fingers and rattle across the table, the story becomes clear. Welcome to Bone Throwers Theater, an RPG actual play podcast.
Welcome back to Bone Throwers Theater for our commentary on the one-shot of Shadowrun. My name is Aaron.
This is Johnny.
And I'm Jordan, and I was playing Jinx.
And Aaron was playing Deacon, and
we never got a name for me.
We never got to Johnny's name.
Or Mike.
or Mike. Well, Mike unfortunately had to be written out of the story.
Yes, unfortunately he had to
leave. But that was, by the way, my name is Jeremy, and I was GMing this. Also playing Jeannie, and also playing Lily, and playing Mev. And didn't get to play Michael or Gabriel all that much because of Jordan's epic role.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jordan.
You're welcome.
It was a combination of the two, because it was the foam and the lazy.
Well, that first one, where May didn't get to do pretty much anything that first round, and then the second round, she rolled so low.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All she could do at that point, because she was down to 2 points of damage.
Yeah.
So all she could do was try and stand back up.
Thanks to lightning and explosives.
So I was waiting for that explosive foam to be used like that for a while. I was waiting for May to pop out somewhere, and I could do that.
And this is interesting, because we mentioned that I test ran this with a different group just to see how, one, I wanted to see how this memory mechanic would work. And I would say the differences in the two runs of this were vast. Vast. They gained so much memory very quickly, but honestly, they never got to the end. They only got one flashback in their entire run with three people. Everybody else gained like all the other three memory points.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, Johnny did not do until very close to the end.
I have a third one. Finally,
yeah, you even got to the third one. So it's interesting, the solutions to everything. That tank scene, though, where we kind of wrote out Mike's character, the troll, was one where it was written into the stories, like, if anybody's going to die, they're going to die here.
Yeah.
Because of that liquid.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's perfect. The test group, they almost died there.
For a split second, I thought about sticking my hand in the liquid and seeing, like, what would happen. But then I second thought.
So, same solution, except it was the dwarf with the axe that went to break it. And the dwarf also, so there's something that we'd never talked about. They have what is called qualities, which is similar to our complications that we've done in Mini Six before. So the dwarf has a natural ability to resist pathogens and toxins.
Okay.
Gave him a plus to that roll, so when he rolled after getting sprayed in the face with the goo, he was just like, oh, tastes salty. Man, that's all that happened.
That's awesome.
So I was like, oh, and it was surprisingly, it was Yosef's character, so you can't imagine Yosef. But the solutions that were come up with were like surprisingly different.
Mm.
They took no explosives at all.
Oh, wow. And that was such an important...
That's actually surprising.
I was really this close to not taking anything. Like, just doing another ranged weapon. Something for close range for shotgun. And then I was going to... But then I was like, you never know. We went one...
And they surprisingly worked much more as a group at that beginning section. Like, when they got to the armory, like, I was like, man, you guys are going to end up with weapons that are fantastic for you. Because they would pick up something... And they caught on very quickly to, if I said, you have this item. And they're like, this item doesn't feel right for me. And they would hand it to somebody else.
Yeah.
And then that person was like, oh, yeah, this feels great. So they ended up with weapons that they could actually do something.
Yeah.
That's good.
Like, so that's why I tried to throw that in there, that when Jeannie had the sniper rifle, she didn't know what to do. And she was just firing willy-nilly.
Yeah. I like that. That's
neat. The weapons I chose for myself were perfect.
Yeah, so let's see here. Let's go through some reveals for the characters.
Yes.
Knife and the orc in the face worked well, perfectly.
It did work really well.
Jeannie, her frame suggested that she was a human.
Yes.
Okay, which is why her character sheet was labeled human. Uh-huh. I was really hoping one of you guys would pick that one. The way it turned out, that the test run, I ended up running Genie the last run.
Nice.
So that was fun. She has a quality called an elf poser. And that is an actual thing in Shadowrun, where you have humans who surgically modify themselves to look like elves because they sort of worship that kind of
back-to-nature approach
thing. Yeah. But they're surprisingly why people do it, because they're really not accepted by anybody. Mm-hmm. But they think so highly of the elves that they want to try and be like them. So, which never really came into play in your guys' run, but was heavy in the test run. Like, they found that out very quickly.
And I think that also, like I mentioned earlier, having a number of players that are not familiar with Shadowrun versus players who are familiar with Shadowrun.
Yes, that's true.
Can really play into some of that, which is cool.
Yeah, I actually have done a lot more. There's lots of things I'm like, oh, you really should do this, or do you need to do this? And I'm like, no, I can't tell them that.
Yeah, it's just like racial stereotypes.
Yeah, so I didn't really talk about that much at the beginning, but that seems to be a similar thing across whatever world you're doing, that there's similar racial stereotypes, even in any, like a high fantasy thing, there's still that racial stereotype. So Genie was, in all intents and purposes, the Decker / Rig. She was the electronics person that could jack into anything and control the vehicles.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was her role in that. Jinx, you were the elf combat mage.
Very powerful one, too.
You had some skills. Some skills.
Some pop.
Some skills.
Yeah, you figured that out pretty quick, too.
Like, yes. The rune tattoos were sort of the giveaway on that one. Yeah. You can almost tell at that point, you got some magical. And then the fact that you had no jacks.
That was actually, I actually tried to tap into magic before that.
Because you said you wanted to sit down and really center yourself. Yeah. I was like, all right, you're going that way. And I was like, oh, this is going to be good. But you had levitate, which is why you levitated the troll when the dwarves disappeared.
Yeah.
And they disappeared because of what they were.
Yeah.
Not because of anything they did, because of what they were.
Uh-huh.
You had lightning bolt, you had physical barrier as skills, which you all used. Something you did not, something called mana bolt or mana ball, which targets someone's willpower instead of their physical
thing. I needed that.
So the first group, they did that. Jaden was the one that picked the combat.
That doesn't surprise me. Because he knows all that kind of stuff.
Well, no, he didn't know anything at that point.
Well, not, he didn't know the character had it, but I'm saying he knows Shadowrun has that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but they burst it in through the stairwell in the basement. That was his initial reaction, was to do something to try and make it so they couldn't see where they were. So I was like, mana bolt, which goes to the willpower. So they just got confusion. At that point.
That was something I was trying very hard to do, was I was feeling like the character was, my interpretation of the character was very much like he was a talker, obviously. I don't think I can play a character who isn't a talker. But I was trying to use like persuasion, essentially. And if I had known that I had something that could lower someone else's willpower, that would have been really effective.
The persuasion person
was
Deacon.
Yeah.
Which I tried once. Early on, and didn't do anything with it afterwards.
Deacon is the stock character of the face. So you had con, you had negotiation, intimidation, perception.
I did use some of those.
Some of your skills, which is why that flashback was you negotiating on the bridge against someone who was about to commit an act of terror.
And I did actually want to ask you, who exactly was I working for? Because I said I was working for Kat just based off of...
Right. So we'll get to that as part of the memory triggers. Some of the information that you got was about the mission, but not necessarily about your character.
Yeah.
So your character knew that greed played a portion into it, knew there was somebody that was working for greed, and then somebody was hired by Kat.
Genie.
Genie obviously was hired by Kat. You found out from her flashback.
Yeah. the rest of us were then hired by the...
By Seder Crow.
Yeah.
So that was Deacon's character, was the face. The troll was an enforcer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Not a troll enforcer. Had a lot of close combat, a lot of weapons kind of thing, a lot of intimidation, that kind of stuff. And I mentioned the troll's name is Muggs. When,
right.
Mm-hmm. Which is a very enforcer name.
Person. Yeah. The other dwarf couldn't recognize Muggs.
I thought it was funny when you said that you were listening to the Dresden series. I'm like, this kind of feels like a Harry Dresden story.
It did.
Man, I can see Lily as the archive. I can...
We'll get back to some of these NPC inspirations.
Yeah.
And this comes way, way back, even before I even knew Dresden was a thing. So, Johnny's character, the orc,
never got a name.
Was a Sprawlganger. You were just the fists.
I used that.
If we had gotten to your flashback, really, out of all the characters, I wanted to get to your information the most because you could have played a very different role in that garage scene.
Yeah.
Because your flashback was basically you were tested to be a part of this group by a Sprawlganger fight where you were in the ring with a bunch of people just fighting to protect whatever was in a duffel bag that you had no idea what it was. You were going to protect that duffel bag no matter what.
Yeah.
And then in the fight, someone was going to brush against the duffel bag or run into it or trip over it, and you would have heard a whimper from inside the duffel bag. You were going to succeed, and then the Johnson, Mr. Johnson, is always the name of the person who hires you because they don't want to use their name. So everybody who hires a Shadowrun is always Mr. Johnson. No matter if it's a female or a male, it's always Mr. Johnson.
Yep.
Was going to say, you've done well. Now can you follow instructions? And was going to have you shoot into the bag. And that was going to be...
That would
be
harsh.
That was the actual test. It was not, could you fight everybody off? Would you shoot the bag knowing what was inside of it?
I don't know that I could.
So you were the Sprawlganger.
What was the character's name?
Sledge.
Sledge.
So... I have a question about how the whole thing ended. So, Genie made it to Extraction with the Lily.
Prototype.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we going back in?
Because we failed. Genie got away with a computer program. Lily was a computer program.
I know
that. Yeah.
No.
No?
Hmm?
Lily was not a computer program. So this is where the other group got to a point where you guys did not technically get to. Everything in the garage happened so fast that you didn't get to a point where the dwarf out in the real world was going to tell you that the second team was at the extraction point ready to extract the girl. The girl was also virtually in the Matrix.
Yes.
At a different location.
Oh.
So her actual body needs to be rescued from a different location.
Okay.
That
makes sense.
That makes sense.
So that was part of yours. There's more horses in this race.
Yeah.
Saying that this was a multi-pronged
stuff.
Yeah. Okay. That's why the dwarf kept giving you time limits. You got to be here at this time, here at this time. You got to be there. So the premise of it is Omnicorp is actually an AI.
Okay.
That was constructed by a different corporation. That lost control of the AI. And the AI started to wreak havoc inside the Matrix. The AI realized that it was confined to the Matrix and wanted to find a way to
escape.
Leave the Matrix. So it was looking at...
A child that could leave the Matrix.
Yes. A child that also had some magical abilities. So the AI could rule the Matrix, the physical world, and the astral world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why none of the actual corporations that had been around for a long time liked Omnicorp.
Yeah.
Because they knew what it was and knew it had to be stopped.
Hmm.
Now, knowing it had to be stopped didn't mean they didn't want that technology for themselves.
Right. Correct.
So that's why you had these other trying to stop it, but at the same time trying to steal it for themselves.
Yes. Craziness.
So you had a player for Cat infiltrate the Seder Krupp organization to try and use their Seder Krupp people as cannon fodder so they could get the technology out. So everything, and you, Jordan, you picked up on this when you said the rooftop scene. It's like, why does it feel like we're fighting our clones?
Yeah.
And the other group picked up on that as well. It's like, because there was one point where someone had the monofilament whip, and they went to whip one of the people on there, and they missed horribly. And I said, the person dodged out of the way, and they reach into their coat, and they pull out another whip. And, and it's like, what, are we fighting anything that has what we have?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, you are. Until you fight May, anything that May is going to throw at you, she's going to say, all right, this is what you got. That's what I'm going to use.
Because that's how AIs work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you notice, when you went on the rooftop, one of the opposing people went right after you with a very similar attack.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The orc came at, running after me.
The orcs charged each other. Genie had the sniper rifle. So the person that shot back at her shot with a rifle. You originally shot with a shotgun. You got a shotgun shot back at you as well. You shot with a pistol. Person shot with a pistol. You tried to use magic. They tried to use a physical barrier to shield themselves.
Man, if I had had a better role, then that could have gone really differently.
Yeah.
Lots of fun.
Yeah, I really like it. Like I said, I really think you should work on publishing this.
You can probably expand it to a full-on campaign path.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
And
because either repeating the same mission or...
adding in different elements.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like I said, there are things that both play groups didn't get to. The garage scene was the end scene for both. There was actually another scene that was going to happen, but everything just kind of felt natural to have it end at the garage scene. Mm. There was going to be, even though Lily was like, don't take me back, it was actually, you're going to go back in to fight May
and the
brothers.
I seriously was like, okay, we need to go back to Omnicorp
and actually fight May.
Yeah.
Could I have actually severed her from the AI?
Yes. That other group, that's what they did in the garage. They held Lily down and cut it out of her neck. That's the thing. When they were doing
that's what y'all were talking about doing.
When they were doing that.
Well, I didn't want to do it physically. I wanted to do it magically.
When they were doing that, that's when Genie made her move. Is Genie was holding her down. They cut it out.
She took the core, and
as soon as they tried to do that, whoever was cutting out, I think it was Jaden's character at the time, because he could see where the thing was cutting it out. His character held on to the chip. At that point, they worked something out where Genie was plugged into the rig, to the vehicle, and made the vehicle crash over top of them.
That's awesome.
But as the vehicle crashed over, and then everybody got up to see what was going on, Genie and Lily were gone. And at that point, the other team had already said they made it to the extraction point. Mm-hmm. So, where they didn't kill May, they got the chip. They didn't get the girl. Where you guys killed May, you didn't get the chip or the girl.
Yeah.
Which brings me to NPCs. You mentioned this feels like very Dresden.
Yeah.
All of these NPC-type characters were actually drawn from our very first Shadowrun campaign with Mike.
Uh-huh.
The character of Yo was my mage character in that Shadowrun.
Uh-huh.
The dwarf, that was the Decker.
Uh-huh.
The one giving you instructions. That was Chummer.
Yep.
From our initial Shadowrun campaign. And the idea of protecting a little girl also came from that original Shadowrun campaign, because my character got latched onto this protecting this little girl. So that's where that got drawn from. Nice. But yes, you see how it's very much like that Dresden type. So what do you guys think of? I know the rules were frustrating, but the memory mechanic idea.
I like it. For me, it was very frustrating, but
I could see the first target being a little lower. But it doesn't matter. I mean, once you hit the exploding...
Once you hit that exploding six, unless you're me, you get it. It
should be doable.
Because I failed that exploding six 3 times.
Right.
So, like I said, the first run gained memory very quickly, which I was like, oh gosh, is this...
Yeah, I had lots of memory triggers that I was hitting, but...
And I even messaged you guys on... I think it was like when I ran it. Brian, his first memory roll, 1D, rolled a 37.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With 1D, rolled a 37. I'm just like, Do I just give him all his memories back right now?
You remember you've been here before.
I think I would have worked it in reverse. Like, I would have had the target number for the first one easier.
Be low?
Yeah.
And then work
and then
higher.
Make it, like, target number for the final flashback, because that's the mother load right there. So I would have, if I was going to do anything, I would have probably made that, like, a 20.
Or you can still make that a 9.
I mean, I'm thinking in terms of open D6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you make it a 9, you still have to hit the exploding 6. Plus a re-roll.
Right.
But you have more dice
you
to begin your first pool.
See, I was thinking of it in reverse. Like,
the more you remember,
the
easier it is
to
remember.
The more pieces of information you can link together about who you are. So that's why the first bit of memory is going to be tough.
Well, I can see where that would come into play, like, in an actual physical brain. But we're talking about people who are working with augmented reality. So to a certain degree, if you're hitting your memories early, then later, deeper information.
I think the memory wipe is part of the upload into the Matrix.
The memory wipe was a mistake, if you remember.
Yeah, you said that was a mistake.
Me like, this shouldn't have happened. This shouldn't have happened. It's a fail-safe of May. So what they were doing, because initially they were just sending a Decker in.
Yeah.
So they decided to split it up and give everybody little bits of information.
And we were actually supposed to be working as a team and sharing all that information.
Yeah.
Right.
Instead of...
So right, but like what, because the failsafe was if you went in and tried to remember too much, that's when you were burned from the inside out, which is what happened to Zero.
Yeah.
That was the charred body.
But Zero would have been our guide.
Zero knew, that was his thing, he knew where the armory was.
Yeah.
What ended up happening, and the first group was able to figure this out, was something went wrong in the upload. And everybody's memories that they were supposed to hang on to all got put into Zero's body.
Which is
so. Which is what killed him.
Yeah, I like it.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, and all in all, I like the system.
I do like some of the changes from third edition to fourth edition. However, I think they tried to simplify some things, but I think they made things more complex, like your list of attributes is like, what? There's so many attributes.
Yeah, it should have kept the same attribute list.
It should have. I like the edge points.
I do like that a lot.
And I like the change that they made to the rule of 6 and the rule of 1.
So the edges, I think, were probably... So this edition is copyrighted 2013. Thinking back, that was around the same time that Savage Worlds was really big.
Yeah.
And some other games that have some really big luck-based mechanics baked into it. Like, there's a real strong in-game currency with Savage Worlds. So I think that they were trying to emulate some of those successes as well. It's similar to Fate Points and Fate as well.
Yeah.
Seeing that, I see it as an influence from the design time period and what was going on in terms of game. I like it. I think it's a really good iteration of the mechanical philosophy.
Yes.
But it's definitely something of its time. And I think it's something that's good. It's something that gives players agency and gives you a chance to actually improve your roles in ways that really feel meaningful.
The only problem I have with the Edge system is, like, it's great for a player standpoint, but for a story standpoint, like, you know, Star Wars, you have Force Points, which give you double your dice. That's explained story-wise in the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's, how does these fit into the overall story of Shadowrun?
And the way they put it is I know some systems have a luck rating.
Yeah.
That's your luck. Some people are more lucky than others. So that's why some people's edge points are higher than others.
Yeah.
Thinking about the damage tracks, I feel like I was very lucky that I didn't burn myself out.
You almost did.
Yeah.
When you stumbled in the hallway.
Yeah.
You had 1 point before you were going to go unconscious.
Yeah, that's one thing with magic is when you cast magic, you have to resist magic damage.
So that's another thing that you not having played Shadowrun extensively, you didn't try to do, which actually went to your benefit because Jaden... being that mage character and knowing how Shadowrun worked.
I'm sure he pushed it to the limits.
He pushed it to the limits, and there are some times where I was like, I don't know if he's going to survive. Just a sense. When did you first get the sense that you guys were in the Matrix?
I never did.
It wasn't never? Until towards the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when May started fading, you mentioned she fades digitally, and I'm like,
yeah, that's when it hit me. But like when the dwarves disappeared, I thought they were just doing an astral projection type deal.
Yeah. Okay.
And so then when Lily starts talking about him being in another world, I'm like, he's in the Matrix.
Yeah.
I love that. Maybe you thought that the other guy was in the Matrix and you guys were.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's like, but you've also got two people who haven't ever really played and then one person who hasn't played in.
So, with that, you as the mage decided you were just going to look at the astral world, which is called astral perception. As a mage, you can do what's called astral projection, where you actually leave your physical body to travel on the astral plane. I don't know how many times Jaden tried to do that. And it was baked into this story that you could not do that.
Right, right.
Because you're going to leave your body, but your body is nowhere where your mind thinks it is.
You're not actually physically in your body.
Yes.
And so that's what's crazy about none of us picked up on it, because there were so many things that you said that it was pretty clear that we were, like, looking back, we were in the Matrix. That whole conversation with the other elf. Mixing the technology and magic. The dwarves disappearing.
I thought that conversation was about working with somebody like Blondie.
You know,
Genie.
Yeah.
Because I thought that, well, first off.
I thought the dwarf was in the Matrix the entire time. Because every time that Jordan used magic on technology, the dwarf got feedback.
The dwarf when the car got shot.
Oh, yeah.
What was that? It was like things like that that made me also think he was in the Matrix accessing some of these things. I liked it.
Well, he was controlling things in the Matrix. He was actually controlling the car, which is why the people on the roof were there inspecting the cars, like, why is this car showing up?
And see, that's why I was like, I knew that's what he was doing, but I thought he was doing it from inside the Matrix.
Right. Out in the real world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I was thinking that the dwarves were doing something magical.
No, that's what I. That's what with this spirit. I thought they were actually manipulating things.
The first group, by that time, they didn't have enough memories to pick up on this as well. And that's why I said the hallway looks just odd to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because had some memory, you didn't realize it subconsciously. It's like, there's supposed to be more to this hallway. But because the alarm was tripped when you got on, the AI started to rewrite things in that hallway. Which is why that offshoot was partially blocked off.
Well,
so it's actually the computer program rewriting the structure of that building.
Yeah.
It actually reminded me of a video game I played called Call of Cthulhu, where you're walking through this hallway that's endless for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, man, this feels like that hallway in Call of Cthulhu. But I was like thinking that it was just, a sub-basement or
something. And Johnny, I thought you were going to get your memories back so fast, because when you entered that hallway, you did something where I want to, like, stealthily run.
Yeah.
And you have your
character. I had lots of memory triggers.
Your character had a skill called shadowing, where you could follow somebody very easily without being noticed.
Well, that's why I sent
the
watch to the dwarves.
So that's why you went to follow the sound that and the dwarves that were down there. So I was like, oh, Johnny's going to get some memories now.
That's just it. Like, if they had gone down the hallway or something, I would have followed them. So they were just going back and forth.
So let me ask you a question, because one of the first things that I did was the eyeballs. And so I went to dig into the eyeballs, and I had written that down on my skill sheet as body theft. Because I didn't know what else to put it at.
Right. So and this is part of not knowing the system, and this even Johnny struggled with this a little bit, because third edition is so different. When I was telling you to roll a certain number of dice, you got to remember, if you have a skill corresponding with that, you're rolling the skill and the attribute. So if I told you to roll 9, it's you're most likely, I've got 9 in this. No, you don't have 9 in that.
Yeah.
That skill and the attribute.
Yeah.
And if it was a low number, it was probably because you didn't have a skill and you're just rolling the base attribute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's cool. I liked it.
Glad you guys enjoyed it. It got much more intense there at the end for the other group. Kind of tell you what one thing that happened. The troll, unfortunately, this bit of information didn't come out. The troll knew also that there was a mole. And their instructions were to take out anybody that wants to take control of the asset by themselves. So it came down to a point where they were debating where they were going to cut into Lily, and at that point, two characters got up to defend Genie, and Yosef's character got up to defend. Well, actually, Yosef's character got up first, and I was like, okay, I got to do this, otherwise Brian's character is going to end just killing Yosef's character. So I got Genie step in, and then it got intense because Brian at that point was like, all right, I'm killing one of you two. What's going on?
So yeah, let me ask you a question. This just triggered something in my mind. We all wrote down that attribute that we had to roleplay.
Yeah, that came in a little bit. It didn't come in a whole lot. Aaron got a role from it. Genie got a bunch of roles from it. Unfortunately, Mike wasn't playing the troll in such a way. He took the
some, troll.
Some of the attributes that were randomly picked for him didn't really work out for the role-playing aspect because, surprisingly, the troll drew the character aspect of overly chipper. But Mike was like, I'm a troll. I'm going to play a big, gruff troll. And then Johnny, you drew yours as the orc, the sprawlganger, as one that didn't resort to violence first. And the first thing you do to the elf is punch him. So I'm like, well, you can't get a roll for that. But Aaron, you got a roll because you searched the body and decided you were going to pocket the key card. Because you got the klepto. And so what I was like, if you were to say, I want to try and take some more things from the armory, I was going to be like, all right, roll some memory.
Well, you know, it's like at the beginning, I was trying to figure out what my role was.
Yeah.
So I kept trying different things completely.
Yeah.
So like for me, I was actually trying to base my character off of David from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No wonder I punched you.
Play by the rules.
Play by the rules. Actually, I think I did that as a general ethos fairly well. Like,
yeah.
It was cool. But, so that's why my character was kind of like, ew. Mm-hmm. You know, it's because I was trying very hard to be, like, in the role of David. Like, because I'm, like, thinking, what characters do I think of as, like, a modern technology-loving elf?
Right.
So, that's one thing I would probably try and change if I were to run this again, is try and figure out a different way to do those role-playing characteristics a little bit differently so that they could be more a part of
because like we know we all wrote down a characteristic.
I could have just handed it to you, so yeah, you knew it, but not
it could have been
exactly. You don't. It's not. It's not a memory. It's just a personality. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. That could be a tough one.
Well, I think we are pretty much at a good spot for our commentary.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. I enjoyed running a Shadowrun game again. This is like my niche where I'm like, oh, this feels like a really good story. And that's why I wanted to bring back some of the original characters where we started with Shadowrun. So I'm going to give a shout out to Mike Karkoff and have him listen to these. And then as soon as he hears that elf tavern flashback, he's like, oh, I know that character. And he's going to hear the description of the dwarf, the wiry dwarf with the welding glasses, and be like, oh,
like,
my gosh.
That sounded familiar to me, too.
I was like, oh, my gosh.
It honestly sounded like a character from World of Warcraft to me. Mm-hmm. So.
Good stuff from Shadowrun.
Good stuff.
Very much good stuff.
I love it. And just as we close out, Johnny got that memory because if you read Mother's character sheet under name.
It's Mother May I.
Mother
under
M-A-I.
Very nice.
Yeah, I like it.
If I were to title this,
that
would be the title of this run is Mother May I.
Yeah.
All right.
So I hope you guys enjoyed listening to it and enjoyed this playthrough of the 4th edition of Shadowrun with our own memory twist thrown in. Thank you guys for listening to Bone Throwers Theater. Hope to see you, hear you, hear us on another one shot in the future.
We'd love to hear you too.
Catch you on the flip side of the Matrix.
Thank you for listening to Bone Throwers Theater. We are releasing this podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. That means you can share the podcast but please do not modify it or try to gain financially from it. If you would like to visit our website, you can do so at bonethrowerstheater.com. If you would like to send us an email, you can do so at bonethrowerstheater@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is bonethrowerstheater. You can also look us up on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And until next time, may the bones fall ever in your favor. This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.